With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you exclusively by the Reality Check Podcast Network.
Welcome everybody to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. An in-depth, hard-hitting, cutting-edge look and today's product of the world of professional wrestling. Now, without further ado, let's introduce your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. Hey guys, welcome back to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. This is the flagship, episode number 115. I'm your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. I hope everybody is doing well. Hope you all are staying safe, happy, and healthy during this pandemic. We're still in crazy times, but, and I'll get into this a little bit later, will we see fans back at wrestling shows this summer? Could possibly quite happen. It could quite possibly happen. We got a bunch of news this week that I'll cover later on in the RTW news desk, but first we need to get into last night's SmackDown, so here we go. Here is what I thought about this week's Friday Night SmackDown. As is the usual for the last couple of months, Friday Night SmackDown coming to you from the empty WWE Performance Center in Orlando, Florida. We open the show with Daniel Bryan, who comes out to the ring and talks about the Money in the Bank match and what it would mean to him for him to win. Daniel then demands that Baron Corbin come out to the ring so they can settle things one-on-one. You ask and you shall receive, Daniel. And I'm going to play this for you right now. Here is your king, Baron Corbin, answering Daniel Bryan's call to the ring.
Daniel, I'd be careful what you wish for calling out a king. You know, my kind makes your kind suffer, just like I did your coach. But I'm going to save you some time because you should stop dreaming about winning money in the bank, Daniel, because that's all it is to you. It's a dream. And I hope you don't think you're the only one in the match that has won that money in the bank contract before. And at headquarters, on top of those towers, I will stand tall on top of that ladder, looking down on all of my subjects as king, money in the bank.
Dude, what are you going to do if you win? Are you going to squander your opportunity just like you did last time? If memory serves me correctly, there have been 23 Money in the Bank winners, and you are one of only 4 people to completely blow it. And I mean, how does that even happen? You get a title opportunity any chance you want. You can just surprise people here and there, and you can just go in, and you can cash in the briefcase. You can cash in the contract. And you blew it. That doesn't make you a king, man. That makes you a loser.
Hey, you better watch it, or you're going to end up like your little coach or Elias. Look, a lot of things have changed since we both won Money in the Bank. You used to be young and hungry, and now you're tired and just desperate. I mean, you hired Drew Gulak as a coach. Now, I was strong when I won Money in the Bank back then, but now I'm stronger and smarter. And Daniel, I'm going to show that to you right now.
For those of you that don't like Baron Corbin, I don't get it. I've been saying it for months now. This guy is one of the most improved wrestlers in the business right now. You know, for a guy to not really grow up that big of a wrestling fan to be, a football guy, to come into, he played in the NFL and end up getting injured and got into wrestling, you know, for a guy that was green as goose shit, he's really done a fantastic job, you know, defining what his character is and what his style is. And I think the sky's the limit for him. I think once we get back to normal, you're going to see him get the continued push that he was getting previously. But I think, you know, with some roster shifting around, I would love to see Baron Corbin possibly, you know, in a program with Drew McIntyre this summer or this fall. I think that would be a cool thing. I love the fact that Corbin showed a video of him defeating Drew Gulak and then beating him down with Shinsuke and Cesaro just to get under Daniel's skin. Then you have Daniel mocking Corbin for failing to successfully cash in on his Money in the Bank contract when he won it the first time. Corbin says, man, forget all that. You know, I'm stronger and smarter than I was before. And then we get into our first match, which is Daniel Bryan versus Baron Corbin, and it was a barn burner. Pretty long match, too. But I really, really enjoyed it. The finish of the match showed Daniel getting caught trying to go for a suicide dive. And then he kicked the leg of Corbin. And then he kicked him in the head. Corbin flew backwards and got really just pissed off. Like, almost like annoyed at Daniel. Like, I haven't been able to put you away yet. And I let his temper get the better of him. And since there's a bunch of ladders set up at ringside and all around the performance center here, for obviously Money in the Bank coming up, he grabbed a ladder and threw it at Daniel and got disqualified. And in typical, you know, typical heel fashion, he's like, what did I do? Like, almost like a football player who commits an egregious, you know, pass interference call. And he's like, what the fuck, man? I didn't touch him. This is the same stuff here with Corbin. Maybe that's just the football player in him. But he argued with the ref, like, what do you mean I got disqualified? Well, dude, it's not a no DQ match, and you literally threw a ladder at Daniel Bryan, resulting in disqualification. After the match, Daniel got Baron in the yes lock with the ladder in the ring, and then he got attacked by Cesaro and Shinsuke. Corbin threw Daniel off the stage into several ladders, just kind of beat him up all around. It was a brutal match. Like, if you go back and watch some of the clips, there was visible scratches and marks and welts all over Baron Corbin's body, and Daniel's as well. This is a pretty physical match, and that's the style that Daniel likes. That's been the history of Daniel Bryan over the years, is he wants you to bring it, and he wants you to lay it in, because that's exactly what he's going to do. Our next segment is Braun Strowman, who hits the ring and starts to talk directly to the camera, which I love. And they've kind of gotten away from that a little bit in the last few weeks. Braun was cutting a promo, looking directly into camera, talking about what happened in the last couple of weeks involving Bray Wyatt. And then he gets interrupted. And we have a live version of the Firefly Funhouse. So I will play that for you right now. Here is the lovable Bray Wyatt in this week's Firefly Funhouse.
Hello, Braun.
Tonight,
it's story time!
And tonight's tale is a true story called The Black Sheep.
Oh.
Yowie wowie. Now, once upon a time, there was a black sheep. And he looked... He looked a lot like you. He was big, and he smelled a little funny. But he was stronger than every other animal on the farm. The good shepherd, who was very smart, handsome, and had a ton of sweet muscles, noticed the black sheep wandering alone, and he took him into his home. Now, the shepherd, he raised the black sheep. And he taught him well. And in return, the black sheep protected the shepherd's farm. They had a lot of fun together. But then one day, the selfish black sheep left in search of greener pastures. He didn't say thank you or even goodbye. He didn't even leave a note. And the shepherd was very sad. Aww. Why would you leave me? He cried. After everything I've done for you. But his cries fell on deaf ears. And eventually, all of his other animals abandoned him as well. The end. Well, that's a pretty sad ending. Don't you agree? Let's come up with a happier ending. One where the shepherd finds the black sheep. And he reminds him of his mistakes. And he takes away what makes him happiest. And then the shepherd will take the black sheep straight to the slaughterhouse. For then...
There is no and then. I'm done with these puppets and this Firefly Funhouse. If you've got something to say to me, Bray, then come down to this ring and say it to my face.
Bye.
I'll see you soon.
Friendship that'll never
Bye.
End.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy, the coach from the WWE. Now, there are very few wrestling podcasts out there that I like, but this one I love. I love the name, I love the personalities, I love the content. Follow, subscribe. I do. The Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast, that's where you're at right here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.
Business with personality. That's the idea that launched London's business newspaper, City AM, 15 years ago. And it's the same idea that inspired our new daily podcast, The City View, where you'll find me, City AM editor Christian May, interviewing the most well-known, influential and colourful figures from business, politics and finance. The City View from City AM, with a new episode every morning. It's the perfect start to your working day.
Hey everyone, this is Sharon Waxman. I'm the founder and the editor-in-chief of The Wrap, the premier news source for daily coverage of the entertainment industry. I'm also your host of this new podcast, The Wrap-Up, a show that gives you an insider's look at the top stories in Hollywood. Each week, we'll bring you the latest news on the business of movies, TV, streaming, and tech. So be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you each week on The Wrap-Up.
He's so good. Telling a story about the black sheep, and he literally had this book of called the Black Sheep, with Braun on the cover of it. It was so good. I love this whole backstory. I'm glad that they're calling back the backstory that they have, between the two. When Bray first brought Braun into the original Wyatt family with Rowan and Harper. And I'm really looking forward to see where they go from here. But everything they've done so far has been very well done. And like I said last week, keep an eye specifically on the way WWE uses particular verbiage. The Fiend is not wrestling in this match. It is Funhouse Bray. And I think that may allow some shenanigans to happen, and maybe the Fiend, maybe it's possible to do some cinematic shit. This will obviously be pre-taped. Maybe we'll see something like we saw with, John Cena before their matchup at WrestleMania, where, Bray is out there talking to John Cena, and then all of a sudden the lights go out and they come back on, and then you see the Fiend up on the perch on the balcony. Maybe you'll see something like that here, where both versions of Bray Wyatt will be there at the same time, through special effects and camera work and all that. I expect this to be heavily edited match, but that doesn't mean it'll be any less entertaining. I think this is Vince McMahon, his vision allowing to shine. Like I said, he loves the entertainment side more than the actual wrestling side, and Vince is almost like a kid in a candy store with the pandemic now for his pay-per-view stuff. And, with the Boneyard match, with the Funfly match, the Funfly? Did I say the Funfly? The Firefly Funhouse. And what we're learning about the Money in the Bank match, how that's going to be cinematically shot. You're going to see more and more of this. And I do expect this match to be on that level. Maybe not to the craziness of the John Cena match at WrestleMania 36, but I believe you will see this filmed cinematically. We then get Sheamus against Leon Ruff. This is like the third, fourth week in a row, maybe. God, my head is sunburned. Sorry, I was just scratching my head. I'm like, ow, fuck. Bald people, please wear hats or sunscreen when you go outside. I mowed the lawn yesterday, and it was about 75 degrees here in sunny Middle Tennessee. Sorry for y'all that are still dealing with the cold and the snow and all that and wherever you are around the world, but super nice day. Went out and mowed the lawn and then got my bald ass head burnt because I didn't wear a hat, and now it hurts. But yeah, Sheamus. That just reminds me of being pale as fuck too, and Sheamus and all that. It's kind of 6 degrees of separation. But anyway, Sheamus has been beating down these local performers and jobbers for the last 3-4 weeks now. As you've seen the last few weeks, there has been video packages from Jeff Hardy. Sheamus has taken exception with Michael Cole for throwing to these clips before the body's even cold, before Sheamus is even out of the ring, which I thought was the dumbest shit ever, because Cole's just being told what to do. But after this beatdown, this poor bastard, we get part 4 of the series on Jeff Hardy. There is a WWE 24 documentary that will be coming up on the network here shortly. And this is the final tease that we have for it, titled The Return.
You can see the obvious pain that Jeff is in.
My knee has been weak for a while. It's my worst nightmare now because I'm going to be out for 6 to 9 months.
When I had knee surgery, it was a blessing in disguise. So I was in real bad shape. I've done something every day to better myself. Then it's just going to be so good to be back.
You've been out for 9 months. What's the health status? Where are we at?
I'm officially cleared. It's just like riding a bicycle. Yeah. For me, I've been doing it for so long, so I'm ready to feel it again.
Jeff Hardy, the thrill seeker!
The roof just came off this place. Holy smokes!
I'm ready to return and take my career very seriously. I've got tons of ideas running through my mind, of what I can do that's new and fresh. And I will be different. I will be the 2020 version of Jeff Hardy. There's something left for me to do in the WWE. blessed, man. Especially after the dark days. Just own what you've done and move forward and live this life because you only get one.
This is the last time I can feel that burning deep inside. Gonna give it all I have. Gotta feel that power in my head. Won't stop till I win. You can call me crazy, call it a sin. Living on the edge with the beat of the drums playing in my head. With the beat of the drums.
I know I got it in me to get back to doing what I love to do and do it better than I've ever done it. I take pride in more than anything is just being human with the fans.
I think the people help me more than anything to know that they still care about Jeff Hardy through light and dark. And that hits me in the heart, you know, like every time I experience something like that. This is what I was born to do. I'm ready for the future.
And the sky's the limit.
So it is announced that Jeff Hardy will return to SmackDown on next week's show, and Sheamus leaned into the commentary booth and said that he will be there next week to greet Jeff Hardy, and then he left. So that is where I saw it going. I mentioned last week that this is all going to lead up to a program between Jeff and Sheamus, which should be good. Sheamus has done just about nothing, in fact, pretty much nothing since his return. And he'll finally get a high-profile match here with the enigmatic charisma. He'll finally get a high-profile match with the charismatic enigma, Jeff Hardy. We then go to backstage to an interview with Otis and Mandy Rose. Mandy wishes Otis luck with his Money in the Bank qualifier match later on, and her match is up next. It is the final women's Money in the Bank qualifying match. One spot left, Mandy Rose versus Carmella. And I said to my wife, oh, it's pretty obvious who's going to win this match. Thinking that, you know, there's no way Otis is going to lose to Dolph, right? And, you know, it would be cool if Mandy and Otis were in the same match together and they could possibly help each other out. But during this match, Sonya Deville comes down the ring and has a live mic and starts insulting Mandy. And what... I kind of like this, but I kind of hated it too because of the fact that at times Sonya was talking during the commentators were talking, like, you know, when the commentators have to talk, you know, call them some of the action in the ring and near falls and stuff like that. And Sonya's still running her mouth and you couldn't hear what she was saying at all because the announcers obviously had priority on the audio. So it was kind of a clusterfuck. But in the end, due to the distraction, Carmella kicked Mandy in the face with a super kick and got the pin and the win. So Carmella defeats Mandy Rose to advance in the final spot of the women's Money in the Bank contract ladder match. After the match, Sonya attacked Mandy and beat the crap out of her, man. She threw her into the ring post and then she threw her into the ring steps. And then when Mandy was on her knees with her back facing Sonya, Sonya ran up and gave her the Shining Wizard into the back of the head, and Mandy's face hit the ring steps. That's when Jamie Noble came out and called for help, and Sonya grabbed the mic again and said that she was going to make Mandy's life a living hell, and she's never going to give up. She's going to ruin her life. So quite a bit of heat there between Mandy and Sonya Deville. We come back after commercial to a trainer checking on Mandy. Otis comes up and asks if she's okay. She says yes. We see Otis start walking back towards the arena, or to the arena, can you even call it that? Towards the ringside area. And Dolph Ziggler comes up to Otis and asks if Mandy's okay. And through much heavy breathing, Otis does not answer. Our next match is The New Day, your new 8-time WWE, or sorry. Well, yeah, I mean, 8-time tag team champions between both brands. The New Day has the record for the not only the longest consecutive title reign in WWE history, but they have won the tag team titles more than any other team in the history of the WWE. So your new 8-time tag team champions, The New Day, Kofi Kingston and Big E, are taking on the newly called up Forgotten Sons. Forgotten Sons have had a couple of squash matches since they've come up, but this is their first big high-profile match on the main roster. And former tag team champions Miz and Morrison came out to the ring to join the commentary booth. And we got a really, really good match between these guys. I've said it before. I don't know why the Forgotten Sons didn't get a big push in NXT. They have a great look. They're really good in the ring. I don't see where the disconnect was. But maybe it's because they had so many other good tag teams there, like Street Profits, the Viking Raiders, the War Raiders, War Machine, whatever you want to call them now, the Viking Carpool Karaoke fucking guys. But this match was really good, and I was shocked that they gave the Forgotten Sons the win, and a clean win, too. Jackson Ryker sent E into the post. Cutler hit a powerbomb onto the knees of Blake, and Forgotten Sons hit their double-team finisher for the pin and the win to Kofi Kingston. So a clean victory, and a big victory for the Forgotten Sons. And their first big match is being called up in a non-title match against your current champions, The New Day. We come back to a breakdown of Money in the Bank ladder match, which both women's and men's matches will happen at the same time, which I said, what, for the last few weeks now. I was the first one to call that. I explained it would not make any sense for them to have a men's ladder match, men's money. Christ. It wouldn't have made sense to start off one of the matches, let's just say the men's match, for example, and work their way through the building and do God knows what to the building and work their way up to the roof, and then later on have the women do the same thing. Like, this will be one of the most unique things you'll ever see. This will be the men and the women fighting at the same time, probably interacting with each other and commingling and destroying Titan Tower. It's going to be fantastic. I'll get more into detail into that next week on the flagship. We are a week out, or a week and one day as I'm recording this, but we're a week away from this year's Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I don't know if the entire pay-per-view will be held at Titan Tower up on the roof, or if we'll switch back and forth between the Performance Center and Stamford, Connecticut. But either way, this will be something that you've never, ever seen before, and I'm looking forward to it.
Viva la radio! What's going on? You have John Wangland, one of the hosts of Wrestling With Reality. Check out our shows this week on Wrestling With Reality. We have some great shows. We have our MMA show. We look at, is Khabib Nurmagomedov versus George St. Pierre a reality? Why John Jones is such a disgrace to the UFC? We also have on WCW Monday Nitro Watch Along, and we take a look back at Triple H in his 25-year career in the WWE. So check out Wrestling With Reality on all major podcast outlets.
Hey everyone, this is Stan Wangler from Just Thinking. Stop on by this week and listen to some of the great podcasts we have lined up for you. Two in particular are really good shows. One is called Are We Driving Ourselves Insane? Well, are we? And the next one is called Have You Been Having a Bad Day? Did you have a bad day? Well, if you did, this is the show for you. And I bet you, when you get done listening, you'll feel a lot better. So join us.
Hey everyone, this is Vicky Guerrero, and you're listening to the Reality Check Podcast Network. Excuse me!
We see a highlight spot from Lacey Evans defeating Sasha Banks last week to win a spot into the women's match. Then they go to an interview with Tamina, and Sasha walked up and they were talking trash to each other, and then Bayley came up behind and took out Tamina again, and they all brawled until they were separated. We then see Dolph and Sonya talking backstage. And so, yeah, WWE's YouTube page did not have a clip of this to play, but it's really creepy. Dolph and Sonya were backstage talking to each other, and Dolph said, you know, Otis, guys like Otis never win. You know what I mean? They get sympathy votes. They get participation trophies. Like, guys like Dolph who have looks and talent and charisma are the ones that are always going to get ahead. And Otis doesn't have a chance against him in this upcoming match. And once Sonya's done hurting Mandy, Dolph said, I'm going to slide right up in there next to Mandy and take care of her. And Sonya's like, yeah, you are. And it was just fucking creepy. Like, you'd have to see the visual. Go back on Fox and watch the replay of SmackDown just to see this, because it's totally worth it. We know Sonya's openly gay. I don't know if she's bisexual or, but I mean, they've portrayed her as openly gay, not only on Total Divas, but have, you know, mentioned it on, you know, WWE programming on SmackDown. But it's just weird. Like, I don't know. Is there like going to be like a weird love triangle, or the way Sasha was, or Sonya was looking at Dolph, like with a little bit of lust. I don't know. Maybe I'm perceiving that wrong, but it's just, it was even my wife said that was creepy. So, yeah, definitely go find that and check it out. Our main event is the finals. Well, I would say the final spot. I'm sorry. The second to last spot, because Apollo Crews ended up getting injured on Raw. And I don't know if this was actual legit or if it's kayfabe, but Apollo was taking out of the Men's Money in the Bank match, even though he did win his spot last week. Apollo won his spot by defeating MVP a couple of weeks ago, but then was injured fighting Andrade this past week on Raw. And he was taken out of the Men's Money in the Bank match. So upcoming on Raw this Monday, we will have a last chance gauntlet match. I'm assuming between all the guys that lost, they will have a chance to get in. We saw something similar to this on NXT a few weeks ago, where there was a, was that a gauntlet too? It may have been. There was a match between all the women that failed to qualify for the ladder match to decide the number one contender to Charlotte's NXT Women's Championship. So this is the second last chance match we've had in the last month, which is, I don't know, that's just weird to me. But we'll find out who the last spot will be on Raw. But this is for the second to last spot here on SmackDown. Otis from Heavy Machinery taking on Dolph Ziggler. Tucker has been nowhere to be found. And I'm still telling you, man, that Tucker's going to play a part in all this somehow. Spoiler, obviously, he didn't take part in this match at all. But I think he will cost Otis at some point down the line, maybe even in the Money in the Bank match. You know, maybe we'll see Tucker, who's been jealous of the whole Mandy getting, you know, in between them and all that, and distracting Otis and taking their focus off the tag team titles and tag team matches. And I think Tucker's going to turn heel. And Jeff Johnson said it here, you know, a year ago or so, if you know, that he saw Tucker as a monster heel at some point. And I think he's right on that. I think he's right on the money on that one. I think we'll see Tucker get involved in this Money in the Bank match. But anyway, because Otis won. So, spoiler, sorry. Otis won this match. Not that great of a match, not that long of a match either, but this was your main event. Otis defeated Dolph via pinfall to gain entry into the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match. So, and he won with a caterpillar, which is good. This is a really good show. I enjoyed it. 2 weeks in a row, we've had a good SmackDown. Can't say the same for Raw. Raw was absolutely abysmal this week. But 2 weeks in a row, I really enjoyed SmackDown. Thought the matches were good. I thought the pacing was good. The stories that we're getting with Dolph and Otis and Mandy and all them are good. I love how they're continuing that. I like the fact that we're going to get some stars back next week. I like the fact that you know, they're calling out the backstory between Braun and Bray. I think that's going to be very entertaining. And I'm really looking forward to the go-home shows next week before we lead up to next Sunday's Money in the Bank. You know, one thing I want to talk about, WWE has done a decent job with ambient noise. You know, whether it's having extra people on commentary, you know, to kind of give you more voices to listen to, or the referees being more animated, more loud, and, you know, making noise there, or, you know, having some people at ringside, you know, to kind of distract you. I like it. How long is this going to last, though? As of yesterday, May 1st, it's May 2nd as I'm recording this, a lot of states in the U.S. have been reopening. And there's typically a four-phase plan for reopening due to the pandemic. You know, phase one will last, you know, 14 days, which has been the standard for everything right now, where certain businesses will reopen, like a lot of restaurants are reopening their dining rooms and their lobbies and all that. You know, phase two, if they don't see a rise or a spike in numbers, will be gyms and possibly bars opening and all that. And phase three and phase four, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But at no point in the next month or so are any sports, you know, events gathering. We've heard NASCAR will be going back to racing again without fans. Major League Baseball plans on getting back and having a bunch of doubleheaders and quicker games to kind of get back in the swing of things since they missed all of April. We heard possibly the NHL and NBA may be coming back to finish their playoffs, but at some point this summer, we may see fans back in arenas. I'll get into this here in a second in the news desk, but the governor of Florida is hopeful that through social distancing, they can get people back in the crowd because, self-admittedly, there's a lot of money that comes into his town and, I mean, his state through professional wrestling, and he made note of that this week. He wants people back in the arenas. Now, is that a good thing? A lot of you are going to say no. Some of you are going to say yes. Some of you are going to be on the side that we need to kickstart the economy. Otherwise, we're going to have a global, you know, depression. I mean, not just a Great Depression that we had in the U.S. back here, you know, in the 20s and 30s, but globally, we can see a Great Depression. I'm not going to get into what side I'm on that. But I will say this, there is a very distinct possibility, as we've seen with, say, some of the wrestlers being at AEW, you know, being at ringside, just to try to make some noise, we might see 10 or 20 people in the WWE Performance Center or Full Sail. I don't think we'll get back to the arenas this summer. That might happen this fall or this winter, if you believe what, you know, my buddy Pooh Bear, Grand Pooh Bear, said that he doesn't see crowds coming back at all this year. But I think through proper protocol and safe social distancing and sanitizing and all that, I think we could see, you know, 10 or 20 people spaced out just to get some noise there in the crowds. That would work better at, say, Daly's Place, where it's an outdoor amphitheater. But who knows? I think we're going to start to see some of that, and maybe even at the Indies. That, you know, maybe the Indies will be the, I hate to say the scientific project, but that's pretty much what it might be. If they're allowing gatherings of just say 10 people for now, it would not shock me for an indie promoter to put on a show, you know, at a VFW or you know, a bingo hall or Elks Lodge or, you know, some smaller place. It wouldn't surprise me to see maybe, you know, let's just say 10 people there spread out in the building just to get back to a little bit of semblance of what is the new normal from what I'm seeing. That could possibly happen. I don't think we're going to have arena shows the rest of the year, which sucks. I have tickets in June for the return of Motley Crue with Def Leppard and Poison. Yes, I'm old. But that's supposed to be at Nissan Stadium in Nashville, their outdoor football stadium. They haven't canceled it or postponed it yet, but it's May 2nd right now, and we're getting pretty close. And I guess they're going to see how things go in the next month with this limited reopening. But, you know, that may get canceled too. Who knows? WWE themselves are admittedly taping up until the first week of July, and possibly even extending that to August. So, I mean, even Vince McMahon doesn't think we're going to see crowds back here until at least August. maybe he knows more than we know. I'm not sure. You know, money is power, right? But I think at some point this year, in some promotions, we will see fans returning to the buildings, to the matches. And, you know, take it for what it's worth, whatever side you're on. It is what it is, and I think it's going to happen. I think people are going to take that chance. You know, eventually we might see movie theaters reopening. What sucks right now, especially in the South, is we still have a lot of drive-in movie theaters, which some of you are like, what the fuck is that? We have several here in Middle Tennessee. Three within, you know, an hour's distance. And they're reopening, which is fine. I mean, you're sitting in your car watching movies. You're not mingling with anybody. You're not bothering anybody. But there's also concessions there, and that is, you know, a potential to possibly get infected. But movies aren't coming out right now. I have not seen any new movie releases. I saw The Invisible Man got released straight to, you know, streaming video. Obviously, with nobody in the regular movie theaters, they have not released any major movies at all that were supposed to release. You know, this is the start of blockbuster season. And drive-ins are reopening, but they got nothing to show. They're showing, you know, Trolls and fucking Sonic and, you know, some low-budget horror movies and shit like that. But they're going to get creative about what they do. But at least places like that are reopening as well, you know, that have minimal contact with other people. And I think you could get away with that with a wrestling event. If you spread people apart and nobody came into contact with each other, you know, wearing masks or wearing gloves or whatever PPE you have, or, you know, whatever, and scanning people's phones for their ticket, not have to actually have physical tickets and have to touch anybody, you know, contactless entry. Yeah, I think you're going to see that at some point this summer. I don't think it'll be long. I think, you know, June or July, this could possibly happen. There are other people that say that in the fall, once summer's over and, you know, colder weather comes and, you know, viruses and flus and stuff come back like that, you may see a giant spike this fall if it comes back. But, you know, that's yet to be seen. A lot of promoters are already planning stuff for October. Then I know this is a wrestling program, but that leads to, let's just say, the NFL. The NFL starts, you know, in September. They have preseason games typically in August and, you know, July and August. So, and they're supposed to be adding another week to the schedule this year. Who knows? Football might not happen. College football might not happen. College basketball might not pick up again. If the NHL, you know, and NBA don't finish out this playoff season, they're launching back in September, October, November, or October, November. What's going to happen then? You know, NASCAR can get away with it because, you know, they're driving into cars by themselves. You know, you have the pit crew there. That's a possible chance of infection there, and, you know, your teams and stuff like that. But it's just a weird time that we're in right now, and nobody knows what's going to happen. Even if let's just say, for example, and I know I'm kind of rambling here, I'll wrap it up here in a second, but even using example of, say we're allowed to go back into arenas and buildings and stadiums, this fall, provided we don't have a spike in numbers and all that, and things go on the downtrend. You already have cities or states like New York and California that say that they're not going to have any kind of gatherings or any sports events or, you know, any mass gatherings for the rest of the year. They're not going to have it. Then what do you do? What do you do if you're the NFL owners or the NBA owners or NHL or anybody like that, and you're not allowed to have any mass gatherings in California or New York? Do you play there without fans? Do you move to another city where they're allowing it? I mean, California's even talking about this WrestleMania next year in Hollywood possibly being in jeopardy. You know, we're, you know, 11 months out from WrestleMania 37 in California, and that may not happen, which is mind-boggling at this point, even this far out, to think that this won't be cleared up by then. But that's the state of what we're living in right now, folks. But I still think at some point this summer, especially with your smaller promotions, you will see people back in the crowd.
Hey, this is Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. It's amazing to me that turtles have the ability to speak, let alone host wrestling podcasts. I guess that's what makes them rad.
But yeah, again, this was a very, very good SmackDown. Looking forward to see what they do next week. So let's get into a bunch of the current news we got. We got a lot of stuff going on this week. So here is the current news in the RTW news desk. All right, let's dig into some news here for the RTW news desk. There is a report from AEW that Jim Ross will return to work to AEW Dynamite on this upcoming episode this Wednesday on May 6th. And actually the first time that Jim Ross has been on Dynamite other than calling that Jon Moxley, Jack Swagger, Jake Hager match, which obviously was filmed quite a while ago. Jim was not a part of the four tapings that they had that have played for the last month. So this will be the first time Jim Ross will be live back on the set on AEW Dynamite. Speaking of AEW, Arn Anderson, who is Cody Rhodes' manager, Arn came out this week and said that WWE would never allow enough in-ring time to make a WWE TV title worth creating. Obviously, we know Arn Anderson is a former NWA, WCW television champion. He says, over the years, whenever a new championship is introduced in WWE, there will be a contingency of fans who will question if WWE will be introducing a television championship. Largely known for its legacy in the Jim Crockett promotions back in the old NWA day, the original NWA days, carrying out through the tenure of WCW, the TV championship was a staple championship for the brand and launched the careers of names like Chris Jericho, Steve Austin, and cementing the legacy of guys like William Regal and Arn Anderson. On his podcast, Arn, this week, Anderson answered a fan question regarding why WWE never brought in a television title after acquiring WCW in 2001. Arn was quoted as saying, "I think that was one of the things that separated WCW from WWE. The television title was something you can go out and have a tremendous performer. If I could put myself in that category, who had a lot of positive thoughts about going 20 minutes on television every single week, you could go out and make that championship mean something. That's what I tried to do. That's what Steve Austin tried to do. That's what William Regal tried to do. That's what it was like a badge of courage, if you will. It was one of those championships that probably got over a little bit more than it was intended to. Through experience, no one in WWE was going to get 20 minutes on TV. So if you're trying to have that same championship mean as much, that was the whole thing, 20 minutes. You made the loop with the guy once or twice at the most. Then the time limit went to 30 minutes. Then when you had a 30-minute match and at 31 minutes, you got beat, but you kept the championship, it meant something. You were never, ever going to get that time on the WWE product, which is funny because a lot of matches nowadays on WWE actually go 20 to 30 minutes. Maybe not during the pandemic time, although there have been a couple. Recently this year, they've been having longer, three, four segment matches on TV. So to me, I don't know. That's kind of a lame excuse. But it is what it is. That's Arn Anderson's opinion. And he's sticking to it. Justin Credible said that Vince McMahon would not let him go to WCW. In exclusive with Fightful.com, Sean Ross Sapp had an interview with Justin Credible, former ECW champion Peter Polacco, is his real name. Back in 97, when Polacco was playing the character of Aldo Montoya, he wasn't exactly setting the world on fire in the WWF. He was rarely, if ever, on TV and never winning matches. The character had run its course almost immediately, then stretched out over 2 years. If you watched Raw, Superstar, Shotgun, even WWF on MSG Network, you were probably seeing Montoya lose. He needed a change, and that change was WCW. Justin was quoted as saying, "What I remember happening, and actually it's funny, I just had the conversation yesterday with Mikey Whipwreck. It was 1997, and I had been Aldo Montoya for a couple of years. I had quite a few years on the road working full-time. I was 23 years old, but working a full-time schedule for 3 years, coming into my own as a performer. So I was like, Vince, this character was great to start, but it's a joke. I feel like I can contribute. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall just got started with NWO, and that was blowing up. And I had the opportunity to go down there to WCW. That wasn't going to happen, though. Ready to make a move, Justin asked to be cut from his contract. He met with head honcho Vince McMahon, who promptly denied his request for a release. There was a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow on that rainy day, though. So Justin quoted as saying, I literally scheduled a meeting with Stanford with Vince. I was like, Vince, can I please have my release? He said, no, but what I can do is send you to USWA to train to be a heel. Work down there with Jerry Lawler, and then we'll bring you back up and repackage you. What happened in that short 6-7 weeks was, that was when ECW was down there and working the angle with Jerry Lawler and the USWA. I reconnected with Chris Candido, who was there as Skip and Zip from the Bodydonnas. Actually, he was Skip and Dr. Tom was Zip, but hey. And he offered me a job. Vince basically signed my contract over to Paul Heyman, and the rest is history. That wasn't the last time you'd see Justin Credible in WWE, not even close. After ECW closed in 2001, it was then reborn under the WWE umbrella in 2006. He had runs with the company back then. While they weren't the most creatively fruitful runs he ever had, Polacco says that McMahon was always accessible to him when he needed to talk. Justin said, I always reached out to the old man. You got to understand it's not the way it is today. From what I hear nowadays, if you want to talk to Vince, it takes a couple of weeks. Back then, Vince was very much on hand, like you could go up and talk to him personally. When he offered me my job, he literally, we were at the War Memorial Auditorium in Lowell, Massachusetts. He said, and I was a jobber, he said, PJ, can I talk to you? He took me outside on the balcony and he gave me the speech of the WWF at the time that this is a land of opportunity. We're going to offer you an opportunity. So I had that relationship. So anytime I wanted, it was either Vince or Jim Ross, because JR was still their head of talent relations at the time. So it was either of those two guys, but now it's very different. He said, honestly, it was so mafioso style that I thought he was either going to kill me or let's go back. Polacco was ready to hit the bricks and get out of WWF and seemed sure of himself. Looking back, he remembers the meeting that he had where he asked out of his contract and to be much more, he expected to be much more nerve-wracking than one would think based on his modern-day demeanor. But meeting with McMahon, he said, honestly, it was so mafioso style. I thought he was either going to kill me or something, dude. It's intimidating. I'm a kid. He's the most powerful man that I've watched for years and years growing up. One-on-one in a very remote, dark place in a side corner of an arena, it was very intimidating, very scary. Ultimately, Vince is very fair. He is who he is, but what he expects from you is nothing more than what he'd expect from himself. He's a nut. He works crazy hard, and he expects you to do the same, and I respect that. I hold no resentments towards WWE, although creatively they could have done a lot better. But nonetheless, it was always a positive experience, and I've always had a good relationship and been very fortunate and blessed. To this day, I still have a relationship with WWE in some capacities. It's cool. They're a great organization. Regarding the reboot of WWE-ECW, he said, I thought that was always what ECW, especially in later years, was supposed to be. Extreme didn't necessarily mean blood and guts. At first, it may have. But extreme meant extreme like work rate, high flying like what we saw at the end of ECW with Tajiri or Super Crazy. So if they took that approach and made the ECW brand like a feeder NXT system to pass said torch to the guys coming up to the main roster, I thought that would have been the right move. But unfortunately, that wasn't the vision of the time. Credible would only stick around for a couple of months that year, most notably taking on CM Punk in his main roster debut match, and would make some TNA appearances years later. You can check out the full interview with PJ Polacco, a.k.a. Justin Credible, on Fightful.com. Sami Zayn made the decision to miss WWE SmackDown last week. Not because of the pandemic, but because he had his wisdom teeth pulled out. WWE taped the May 1st and May 8th episodes of SmackDown on April 25th, so Zayn won't likely be a part of either of those episodes. That sucks, man. I hate wisdom teeth and teeth stuff in general. It's really, really... Beth Phoenix and Mara Rinaldo were back on NXT this week, although they were not at the Performance Center, which is why you did not see them on camera at all, which is funny. Tom Phillips was there. Byron Saxton was there. But I didn't even realize this when I was watching it. Morrow and Beth weren't on camera at all. According to dipshit Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio, Ronaldo and Phoenix recorded their commentary for Wednesday's NXT from their respective homes, since it was a taped episode. It was noticeable multiple times during the show the duo were not at the Performance Center due to edits and not being shown on screen, which I'm so dumb I didn't even think about it. Hey, I guess I'm the dipshit, right? Tom Phillips was part of the announce team, setting up the action for Morrow and Beth at the Performance Center. Ryan Satan, that's right, I said that right, of WWE Backstage, adds that WWE made this call as a way to limit both of them from traveling during the coronavirus pandemic. WWE recently changed its taping schedule to limit the amount of live shows they would have had to do each week. Instead of running weekly events, they are taping every 2 weeks. Rob Gronkowski, still the current WWE 24/7 champion, also a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Son of a bitch. He showed off the 24/7 title on Fox's The Masked Singer. The recently unretired NFL star appeared on this season of Fox's. Let's try that again. The recently unretired NFL star appeared on this season of Fox's The Masked Singer, where he was the White Tiger on the After the Mask After the Show. Gronk gave a second performance by doing the floss and the Macarena. He also reminded the world that he remains the WWE 24/7 champion, proudly displaying the title in front of the camera before getting his groove on. Gronk has been the 24/7 champion since night two of WrestleMania 36 when he pinned his buddy Mojo Rawley to win that title. It is unknown, however, if Gronkowski will return to television, but he will remain the champion despite announcing his plans to return to the NFL. As I previously mentioned, Gronk is coming out of retirement to join Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Gronk noted that he may need extra security around him if he's still the champ once he gets back on the field. Chris Jericho says it's time to get their... back on track regarding AEW being named an essential business in the state of Florida and start taping new episodes and having live shows as well. This coming Wednesday, AEW Dynamite will return to a live format after a month of taped episodes. Chris has told Newsweek this week that I think everybody kind of wants to get back to work. We're trying to start slowly and integrate back into life, and I think it's perfect. Obviously, we'll take precautions and all that sort of stuff, but it's time to get back on track, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm doing something different every day and keeping creatively stimulated. I find that the worst thing you could kind of do is fall into the trap of, oh, it's like Groundhog Day. It's like every other day because that's just the way it is. The more you kind of basically entertain yourself, the better off you're going to be. Now, that's regarding him being on commentary with Tony Schiavone for the last month under tape shows or skits like the Bubbly Bunch and stuff with Matt Hardy. Jericho's done a fantastic job being very entertaining in these empty arena shows. So kudos on Chris Jericho, and obviously kudos on Vince McMahon for being named an essential business and getting AEW to do the same. Not that he himself got AEW to do the same, but without one, you wouldn't have the other. So again, thank you, Vince. Kevin Dunn and EVP Bradley Blum reportedly sold some stock this week. According to FTC filings made on April 30th, WWE executive producer Kevin Dunn sold 33,000 shares of his WWE stock at $46.46 per share, which I can't believe it actually got up to that again. It was down pretty low. That comes out to approximately $1.5 million worth of Class A stock, but Dunn still owes 125,361 shares in the WWE. In a separate filing, WWE Executive Vice President Bradley Blum sold 16,358 shares of his stock at $45.32 per share, approximately worth $741,000 of Class A stock. Blum still owns 3,103 shares in the company. WWE stock closed at $44.62 on Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. The stock opened at $44.60 and hit a high of $45.02. Dunn has been with the WWE since the 1970s, was named executive producer in 1993. Blum has been with the WWE for 13 years, being named executive vice president in June 2006. Now, I've seen a lot of you take this news this week and give your own thoughts on why Kevin Dunn and why Blum would be selling off some of their stock. But keep in mind, Kevin Dunn still has over, like I said, 100-something thousand shares. You know, a lot of people are thinking that WWE may be getting ready to sell. Maybe some of the management know what's going on and they're trying to get out while they're getting good. I mean, WWE stock, I think, got down as low as $20-something and has recently gone back up to, you know, the 40s. Maybe Kevin just wanted to sell some off while the stock went back up. He still owns a lot of stocks. But some people think that WWE may be selling. There's been rumors going around for the last few months that Vince McMahon may want out and he may be selling to Disney or ESPN or, you know, a large potential suitor because he sees the writing on the wall that wrestling is no longer as big as it used to be. But or Vince wants to sell while the getting's still good. But trust me, they may be losing some money. WWE is cash rich. I said this a couple weeks ago. They are not anywhere near financial ruin. They are still cash rich. They're still pulling profits. A lot of the cuts had nothing to do with the fact that they are losing money right now. Now, was the preemptive to where they may not see crowds come back this year and they want to kind of cut the bleeding and get rid of some of the stars that they weren't using to prepare for later on? Like I had mentioned, you know, managers in my company and myself taking pay cuts for a month just to prepare for what may happen later on if things don't go back to normal and things get worse. It's good to have a plan. I don't think this is a fire sale. I don't think this is Dunn and Blum saying, oh, shit, we need to, you know, dump off a lot of our stock and you know. They're worried about their future. They're worried about the fact that we may not get back to business as normal this year. We may see things get worse with the pandemic. And, you know, what is wrong with selling off stock and having $1 million in the bank? To me, it has absolutely 100,000% nothing to do with the fact that there may be a potential sale of WWE coming up. Has nothing to do with it. Maybe Dunn bought a bunch of stock at, you know, $25 and now it's back up to $45. He sold a bunch of it and just made a huge profit. People buy and sell stocks every single day. There doesn't have to be a particular reason as to why, or, you know, the sky isn't falling, the red coats aren't coming. Like it's not a major disaster. Just it's all nonsense. I don't even think the WWE will be selling. That's just my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. But right now, WWE has plenty of money. And I don't see any reason why Vince McMahon would get rid of his creation. It's my creation. I'm going to inject it with a lethal dose of poison. Yeah, I just don't see it happening. There were other releases recently. Former Intercontinental Champion Curtis Axel was released by the WWE, which really sucks. Obviously, Axel is the son of the late Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. Axel's real name is Joe Hennig. He had been with the WWE since 2007 when he joined the second season of NXT, when NXT was used to be kind of a game show. Sucks. Sucks for Curtis Axel. Somebody had asked Cody Rhodes this week. Since Zack Ryder was given his release on the big April 15th cuts, Cody and Ryder are really good friends away from wrestling. So somebody had asked him, is Zack Ryder bound to end up in AEW when his no-compete clause expires? Cody said, Zack Ryder is the best. He's got over 2 million followers on Twitter and over 1 million followers on Instagram. Very broad influence, incredibly famous. More famous than many guys out there, including just about everybody in his roster. But that doesn't always translate. The biggest hurdle he'll face is his friendship with me. He's one of my only really close friends in wrestling, maybe my only friend in wrestling. think and hope our paths will cross down the road. He's just entering wrestler prime. Men's wrestler prime is 35 to 40. Which apparently Cody hasn't hit that yet. Ryder said he will not take bookings during the pandemic, which is funny because there's no shows right now. But he did that because he doesn't want to disappoint any fans in case shows get canceled. You'd have to have shows in order for them to be canceled. I'm just saying. As far as another released talent is concerned, Cody gave him a firm no on Heath Slater potentially joining AEW. That was kind of a dick move, right? We'll see who shows up from all these cuts. I still think the Revival are going to show up for sure. John Moxley popped at Mr. McBossman, such good shit line during WrestleMania 36. During the Firefly Funhouse match between John Cena and Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 36, Mr. McBossman, a puppet with Vince's likeness, said the line, "This is such good shit." That quote became famous in the wrestling world after an interview with John Moxley, where he recalled Vince McMahon saying certain ideas were good shit, pal, during Moxley's run as Dean Ambrose in the WWE. The line put a smile on many faces during WrestleMania 36, including Mox's. Mox said, "I kind of popped for it, honestly." Moxley told the New York Post, "I thought it was pretty funny, but it's like, I think I might have popularized that or made it into a pop culture thing, but everybody knows that's what he says. He's been saying it for decades." People who were probably doing Vince McMahon impressions have been saying, "That's good shit," before I even got into wrestling. It's funny that I've been watching for 40 years and had never heard of that. But hey, it's all good. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis wants to keep good relationship with WWE and invest in state. Shocker, right? WWE has made Florida its home since the middle of March, running events at the Performance Center each week. WWE was originally scheduled to hold WrestleMania 36 in Tampa, but obviously had to move the show to the Performance Center during the coronavirus pandemic. WWE was deemed an essential business by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on April 9th, allowing WWE to run shows at the WWE Performance Center and Full Sail University. Florida will lift its stay-at-home order beginning on Monday as the state slowly starts to reopen, and DeSantis could see fans of some capacity back in the arenas by the middle of summer. I personally don't see that happening, but that would be very, very interesting if that was the case. The governor said, "I would like to get to a point. I'm not saying we're going to get in May, but I've helped recruit. I wanted wrestling to be filmed in Orlando," said DeSantis during his press conference on Wednesday. "I'd like them to do WrestleMania. They were going to do WrestleMania in April. That was hundreds of millions of dollars. I want to keep that good relationship. I want to invest in Florida. We've got USC to come to Jacksonville. There's not going to be any fans, but I think that's going to be a good event for people. I work with Phil Mickelson on making sure that they have what they need for that Tiger Woods match. There's going to be a lot of good stuff going on, but I don't think we're probably ready to have fans. I do think if the trends are good as you get into June or July, I think there is a window to have some fans. You're not going to have everyone packed in, but in 90-degree weather, if you're out there and someone's 10 feet away from you and you want to watch a ball game or something, you may be able to do that. So this is something that we're just going to have to do. We're going to be driven by the facts, driven by the data, but I think that Major League Baseball coming back, I'm hearing this, I think that's going to be exciting for a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of possibilities. Obviously, MLB and other sports have discussed the possibility of trying to begin their season without fans, but nothing official has been announced. WWE has continued to cancel or postpone events through the beginning of August, and Vince McMahon recently said on the first quarter financials that he isn't sure when the fans will be able to return to the arena. Chris Jericho said, "Once I got a royalty check in WCW for $0. You think he made the right decision moving to the WWE? Finally, Jeff Hardy was in the news. He was reported as saying that he called WWE asking for help the day before he got arrested in October 2019. Jeff Hardy was arrested and charged with driving while impaired in Moore County, North Carolina on October 3rd of last year. And even before that day, he knew he was in trouble. Hardy's legal and substance issues have been well documented on WWE television and elsewhere. WWE is currently airing a video series on SmackDown that highlights the rise and fall of Jeff Hardy. After returning to the ring in March, Jeff Hardy is seemingly in a better place now, but it took him years to come to grips with his struggles. Jeff was on WWE After the Bell podcast with Corey Graves this week, and he had told Corey that after my first DUI, I said, I got my first and last DUI. I was so sure in that moment. I think he even went on to say, I'll never get arrested again. And remember, I was like, I probably shouldn't have said that. Now, being in rehab, I've learned a lot about the disease known as alcoholism and addiction. Watching SmackDown when they aired the mugshots, that's some heavy stuff. This is my last chance to get it right. I want a few more years out of this body and do the best I possibly can. Now, I still have a legal situation, a black cloud. I haven't been convicted from when I got pulled over on October 3rd, the day before I called WWE and said I need some help. I need treatment. There's something wrong with me with this alcohol thing. I learned so much in recovery, just little things like focusing on one day at a time, not drinking, not doing drugs, and calling my sponsor every day and talking to another alcoholic. There's something powerful when you admit what you are. There's a huge peace in my mind knowing that if I never drink again, I'll never be in trouble. Jeff Hardy plus no drinking equals no trouble. All my trouble has come from drugs or alcohol. Hardy has yet to appear in court to address the October charges as the date has been pushed back multiple times due to the pandemic. He is currently scheduled to appear in court in July. So Jeff Hardy's future in WWE is unstable right now. He has several DUIs and a couple of arrests on his record from drugs and alcohol. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe they'll, he's done some jail time in the past. Maybe he'll do it again. Obviously, I don't think he has a license anymore. I don't know how you would after several DUIs, but he's still, scheduled to appear in court in July. And who knows? You could have continuance after continuance from then once everything gets back to normal, because that's what lawyers do to try to hold it out as long as they can. But eventually there may be a ruling that he may have to do some more jail time. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate, but I don't know if WWE is ever going to give him a push again. And he should have at least one good run left in him. I'm not sure when his contract is up, but I'm assuming all this time out due to injury and all that was added on to his contract like other people had. And, he might not get the chance to rejoin his brother in AEW. I'm not sure, but hopefully Jeff is on the right track. He is absolutely one of my favorite stars of all time. I love Matt and Jeff Hardy. I've said it several times on this show. They are my favorite tag team of all time. I've met them both personally several times. Just great guys, when they're clear minded and on track. And it just sucks to see Jeff go through this, just like his brother did. But hopefully he's back on the right track now, and he can get maybe another good run in here before it's all said and done, provided his body holds up.
Hey guys, it's me, Santino Marelli. Today I'm going to give a little bit shout out to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Ninja Turtles were not real. And it's on the Reality Check Podcast Network. Well, Reality Check, Ninja Turtles were not real. Trust me, I went in the sewer myself. I got trapped, police department came, fire department, long story. So check out the podcast. Because what else are you going to do? To check out Rad Turtles Wrestler. It's fun to say Rad Turtles. Son of my God. In fact, the Turtles chocolate candy, that's my mother's favorite candy, so that's something positive.
All right, well, there you go, guys. That is all I have for the RTW News Desk. So let's close out the program with Polyester the Evil Taylor with this imbecile of the week.
Good evening to each and every one of you imbeciles out there. Welcome back to your favorite segment of the Ninja Turtle Podcast, the Imbecile of the Week, hosted by, well, me, Polyester the Evil Taylor. A few days ago, I believe it was Grappler8 that had tweeted something to the effects of, I believe somebody tweeted saying that NBA players would have to take a 25% pay cut because they're not playing. And then Grappler8 didn't sympathize with the NBA players at all, because he was under the impression that because they make millions of dollars that we shouldn't sympathize with these individuals. Well, Paulie took offense to that. As a rich individual myself, I quoted the not-so-great, extremely overrated Patrick Ewing. He once said, yeah, we make a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money. And that could just not be better said. So then, Grapper 6 decides to chime in because I called Patrick Ewing an overrated lumbering idiot. Well, eventually I ended up calling him a lumbering idiot, but I did say he was overrated initially. And Grapper 6 says, no, Patrick Ewing was a stud. So I put my my tablet down and I laughed some more, and I got on the floor and laughed again. So then I got back on my tablet and I responded to Grapper 6, basically the same thing that I initially said, that he was a lumbering idiot, extremely overrated, he was the number one overall pick, I never really lived up to the expectations of him. I mean, he was a good center, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he was bad, he was a pretty good center, but compared to the other centers that played while he was playing, you could go from Shaq to Alonzo Mourning, David Robinson, and of course Hakeem Olajuwon. I told him Hakeem Olajuwon would run circles around that guy, and which he did. Matter of fact, he even won a title against that very same Patrick Ewing led team in 1994. And he just basically ran circles around Patrick Ewing. He just could not keep up with Hakeem Olajuwon, which in my opinion is probably the third best center of all time behind Kareem and Wilt. But that's just my opinion on it. So he decides he wants to throw a picture to the whole thread. And it's a picture of the 1992 Dream Team, followed by a typical imbecile Grapper response with a little snide remark saying that he didn't see Hakeem Olajuwon on that picture. What he did see was David Robinson and Patrick Ewing, which I had to educate this imbecile, Grapper 6, saying, well, he wasn't a U.S. citizen. How could he be on the Dream Team and representing the United States of America if he wasn't a U.S. citizen? So then he quieted down and said something to the effects of, well, that's not the point. Patrick Ewing and David Robinson were better than Hakeem Olajuwon. And, I just feel that's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my entire life. And, because of that, Grapper 6, you are definitely this week's imbecile of the week for thinking in your little imbecilic brain that Patrick Ewing was better than Hakeem Olajuwon. That's just, it's nonsense. And well-deserved imbecile of the week this week, Grapper 6, well-deserved. And that'll do it for this week, you imbeciles. Give me a follow on Twitter, @ThePauly_Ester, @ThePauly_Ester on Twitter. And tune in again next week. Who knows? Maybe you'll be a Grapper 6.
Oh, Polly. Starting with the grapplers again. Did you not learn what happened last week? Grappler 6, congratulations. You are the imbecile of the week. Because you think that Patrick Ewing was a better center than Hakeem Olajuwon. I don't know where Grappler 6 is from, but I knew where Polly resides. He resides somewhere near Houston, Texas. So obviously he's a little biased when it comes to that. Look, I'm not going to say who's right, but I will say this. Patrick Ewing was a physical force. He was tough. He's a big guy. He's a bruiser. Hakeem was more of a finesse player. Really, really tall, but had such a smooth shot. He, to me, in my opinion, he was one of the greatest pure shooting centers of all time. But there's no doubt the impact that Patrick Ewing also had on the game as well. So I'm not going to say who is better, other than the fact that for both of you guys, I have two words for you. Bill Russell. That wraps up for this week, guys. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am @RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, streaming every Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Central, and every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. And check out my YouTube gaming page. It is called Rad Rob Gaming. If you want to tweet and follow us, the show's Twitter handle is @RadTurtlesPOD. You can send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com, Facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. And you can check us out on Pro Wrestling Tees. Buy a shirt. Support the brand. Support our podcast. We would absolutely appreciate it. You have our undying love and support. It is ProWrestlingTees.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. Also, check out our company website for the Reality Check Podcast Network. It has all of our show links and bios up there. It is rcpodnetwork.com. That is RC, Robert Charles, rcpodnetwork.com. That is our home for every show here on the Reality Check Podcast Network. I will be back on Tuesday for your final edition of the RTW Raw Review. Starting Tuesday, after Money in the Bank, I'll be launching a new show called RTW Rewind. It'll be going through a lot of the stars that influenced me growing up as a kid and influenced you guys as well. Talking about some of the greatest personalities from the past, as well as matches. And we'll be doing watch-alongs. We'll be talking about some pay-per-views, some of my favorite pay-per-views growing up. Also have guests on the show periodically, superstars from the past. It'll be everything retro. So RTW Rewind will be launching 2 days after Money in the Bank, which will be Tuesday, May 12th. And then the Raw Review will be moved into a condensed format right here on the flagship on Saturdays. So until then, guys, I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. I appreciate all of your support. Thanks for listening. I'll see you right back here on Tuesday for the RTW Raw Review Show. Take care, guys. Thanks again for listening to the flagship episode of the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Once again, you can email us, radturtleswrestling@gmail.com, and we'll read your email on the air. Thanks again for listening. We appreciate all your support. You've been listening to the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast only here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.